Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is the Insurgent Radio Network, and this is Tom Metzger, Terrible Tommy, right here in the bunker in the Robert J. Matthews Memorial Bunker, right here in North Central Indiana, and it is March the 14th, 2014. And it's Freya's Day, She-Wolf Day in the bunker. That's right. And we got a beautiful sunny day out there. It's a little cool, but it's supposed to get up into the high 40s today, which is, that's really hot for around here in the wintertime, I'll tell you that. Don't forget to reach us at Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. Send your snail mail and your donations for our various projects there, and we'll take good care of you. And then go up there to resist.com, and you can download a Harvard education. Much better, really, than a Harvard education off resist.com. There's a tremendous reservoir of history and all kinds of research material up there that I'll bet you most of you have never touched. And it's just sitting there waiting for you, like the local library. It's the same way. Local libraries are very underused, and it's too bad because they're great places, and we've got a very nice library here in Warsaw, Indiana, and I use it now and then, but it's not used enough, I'll tell you that. And same way with our website. A lot of the people who should be reading what's on that website, downloading things, are not doing it. And these are many times the same people that get their ass in the jam, and then they say, well, nobody told me. Well, also along with the black folk around the country, we've been memorializing a little of black history. Yeah, we figured we ought to get into the act. And so last week, we covered Amos and Andy, and the story started with the kingfish trying to con Andy out of his nickel that he found out was worth $250, and he was going to get it, but the kingfish got it away, snuck it away from him. And then the kingfish pretended he was a doctor and convinced Andy to that he had a rare disease, and he had to put a blindfold on and all kinds of crazy stuff. And the kingfish trots over and to the telephone, payphone. He's going to call the company, the coin company, and make arrangements to take the coin down there and get his $250. But the kingfish put the nickel in that was worth $250. He put it in the pay telephone and lost it. So that's where we join him this week. And don't forget this series of Amos and Andy Black History Year are brought to you by the makers of Oreo cookies. Yeah. So here we go. Andy's sitting in the chair in the fake doctor's office, all wrapped up and still with a blindfold on, don't know what the hell's going on, and the kingfish is not back yet.
Andy, what is you doing with that crazy thing in your hand?
Amos, 30 minutes ago, the kingfish was on the other end of that thing.
Yeah? Well, what is your pants doing down on the floor over there with the pockets inside out?
Amos, my nickel. Wait a minute. This whole thing is a trick of the kingfish. He done got away with my rare nickel.
Well, what you gonna do now, Andy?
Amos, I'm gonna find that kingfish, and I'm gonna beat him to a pulp. And then I'm gonna beat up on the pulp.
Yeah, now that you explain it that way, kingfish, I realize that you is my pal.
Oh, yeah, Andy. I done it all for you. I only took the nickel so you would lose it. And I even made a deal for you to get $250. And the best part of the deal is, I only gonna take half the money. And I even count on taking the smallest half.
Kingfish, I don't know how to thank you. But tell me this. Where is the nickel now? Is you got it in a safe place?
Well, yes. No.
How come that no messed up in there?
Well, Andy, old pal, the nickel is in the telephone coin box down in Miller's drugstore.
Slow down. Something just kind of whizzed by me there, Kingfish. It seems to me, I heard you say something about the telephone coin box.
Well, it ain't nothing to get excited about. The nickel is in the telephone coin box down in the middle of the drugstore.
Kingfish, I'm going to bust right in the nose.
Now, take it easy. Calm down. We ain't going to get nowhere fighting with each other. The reporting thing to do now is figure out a way to get it out.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing to do, all right. Let me see.
Now, when could you go down there and pry the box off the wall?
I could go down there and pry that box off the wall. I could, hold it.
What you mean is when could I do it?
Well, you is the illogical one to do the job. Being the owner of the coin, you has got prior rights.
I is, huh?
Yeah, so having prior rights, it's up to you to do the pry.
You know, Kingfish, for the first time today, you is beginning to talk sense.
Come on, let's go down.
There they go. Going down to get the nickel.
Good afternoon.
Hi. Hello. Well, here we is, Andy, old pal. Kingfish, is you sure that we won't get in no trouble messing with that phone box?
Of course not, Andy. You was only getting your own nickel back. You has got legal jurisprudence.
I is, huh?
Yeah, now you get in there, and I'll take the dangerous part. I'll stand guard out here. That's what I'm going to do.
Ah, Kingfish, you is a pal.
Andy's got a pry bar. He's in the phone booth now. You gotta get that telephone off the wall. Let him.
Ouch! Who makes so much noise?
There's hardly enough room in here for me to work. Get on the way.
Uh-oh.
Hello, Roy.
Hello, Norma. Say, will you change this for me? I want to use the phone.
Sure.
Oh, boy.
Are you on duty today, Roy?
I'll know in a few minutes. I have to call the death sergeant down to the 32nd precinct.
Oh.
How you coming in there, Andy? Have it for you in a minute, Kingfish.
Is someone using the phone?
Oh, it being used, all right. A friend of mine using it.
Yeah, well, will your friend be long? I got to call headquarters.
What's that last thing you say you got to call?
Headquarters.
Oh, you mean Republicans or Democrat headquarters? Is you a politician or something like that?
Police headquarters. I'm a plainclothes.
Certainly is a noisy diet on that phone in there.
Hey,
Kingfish. Give me a hacksaw. I can't get the money box open.
What's that you say, stranger? Hey, what's going on in there? Trying to rob the coin box?
I never seen the man before in my life.
Hey, hold on a minute, you. And you, come on out here. You're both under arrest.
Hey, mister, you can't arrest me. Kingfish, tell him what you told me. Tell him I got juicy prudence over everything.
Don't worry, Andy. They can't do a thing. They can't do a thing. They can't do nothing.
Well, that's our second session of Amos and Andy, dedicated and sponsored by the Oreo Cookie Factory. And the black cop, he's undercover. He grabs them both and takes them down to the jailhouse. And that's it for our celebration memorializing of Black History Month. Oh, it's Black History Year. I can't keep track of it. Don't know whether you know it or not, but the Ukraine actually was carved out by the Bolsheviks and made into a country of the Soviet Union by the Bolsheviks early on. But Crimea was split off by Khrushchev in the 60s, which had been a very much a connected and part of Russia, as it had been for, I guess, a couple of hundred years. So, little tidbit there if you didn't know it. Well, I think this is pretty funny. Even before the Ukraine standoff, foreign companies in Russia say they were alarmed at the number of executives being deported for minor infractions. Now, with the West preparing sanctions, they're bracing for more. Almost 1,000 people from countries outside the former Soviet Union have had their work visas revoked for committing two or more administrative violations since the end of last year, when the Migration Service and Traffic Police linked their databases. According to the immigration authorities, such offenses can be as minor as a parking ticket, smoking in prohibited areas, and even jaywalking. Ed, that Putin's a pretty sharp guy, I'll tell you. One of the great benefits of the Republican Party, the Republicrats, is they're trying to be so-called middle of the road. You know, that's where either there's a dead skunk or a yellow stripe. And in doing so, they're trying to expel all these good people out of the Republican Party that will be very instrumental, possibly in maybe a third party or a revolutionary party or what. Take this one. This is Billings, Montana. The Yellowstone County Republican Party asked congressional candidate Drew Tarino not to attend a party event this week, saying they will not give him a platform for his racist views. Quote, "There is simply no place for racism in this party," unquote. Well, I hope everybody that feels a little bit of racism in that party quits in mass. This was spoken by party chairwoman Jennifer Owen, said Wednesday. The Yellowstone County Republicans on Saturday are holding their Lincoln-Reagan Day dinner, whoopee, where all major Republican candidates for statewide offices other than Tarino will get a chance to speak. About 300 people are expected to attend. Tarino told the Billings Gazette he is being turned away because he's a self-described Tea Party member. So, Owens denied that claim. Tarino allowed that Owen might have been offended by his support of Operation Wetback, a proposal to deport all immigrants living in the country illegally along with their American-born children. When Tarino announced his candidacy, the Helena real estate investor said he was concerned that in coming decades, white Americans would become a small minority and possibly exterminated by the non-white majority. Bowen Greenwood, executive director of the state Republican Party, said that since Tarino launched his campaign with an offensive racial epithet, many Republicans have decided not to associate with him. Let's see if there's any more of this. Torino said the Yellowstone County Republicans have been the only ones to turn him away. Torino's challengers in the Republican primary are Elsie Artsin, Matt Rosendale, Corey Stapleton, and Ryan Zink. So there you go. Should contact this guy. Torino is a businessman. He obviously knows how to do things and the whole bit. He's saying the right things, and they want to kick him out. Well, we should be friendly to this guy. So it looks like that corrupt old property party is going to lose a hell of a lot of great people. And that sounds good to me. Couldn't happen to a whatever party. It's composed of about 80% hypocrites because they, behind closed doors, they say all kinds of racist stuff. Well, anyhow, Drew Torino, T-U-R-I-A-N-O, is up there in Billings, Montana. If you know about anybody up there, they ought to stop in and say hello to him. He's a real estate developer up there. And you might want to send a letter off to this Billings Gazette newspaper supporting the guy, just to bug him. Well, up in Norway, the Norwegian textbooks just oppose a positive, liberal Norwegian sexuality with a negative, non-Norwegian, often Muslim, sexuality. And nobody agrees on what racism entails or how the topic can be taught in the classroom. A class at a school in Oslo is 75% of the pupils have immigrant parents. That's interesting. Are discussing immigration and integration in Norwegian society as soon soon becomes clear that the teachers and the pupils' understandings of racism are completely different. For the teacher, racism is synonymous with biological racism, which is not prevalent in Norway today. Well, I guess they got rid of any white pride in Norway. Consequently, he finds it difficult to explain why racism is widespread for the pupils. Racism has nothing to do with biology. It has to do with everyday discrimination and different treatment. Oh, yeah. At first, the pupils refused to give examples of negative aspects of immigration. Gradually, they begin to discuss who's an immigrant and who is a nigger, the Norwegian translation of the N-word. Oh, wait a minute here. Let me get some more of this. This is a good one. Okay. Words like burqa and female genital mutilation fly through the room and land on the only Somali pupil in the class. The teacher has nothing to contribute and no power over the situation, which degenerates into racial bullying. See? That's what integration brings you, nothing but discord and trouble. Quote, the Somali boy in this class is racialized in that all the negative traits brought up by the immigrants are transferred into Somalis. Unquote, says Stein Helena Bang Svensson, who presents a detailed study of the class discussion in her doctoral thesis, Effective Change. Cultural Politics of Sexuality and Race in Norway's Education. Quote, you're all racist, shouts the Somali boy at the end of the class before he leaves. Quote, this example is not about whether the teacher was good or bad. The knowledge we have about racism is such that people don't recognize racism when it's right in front of them, says Svensson. Svensson, a researcher in the Norwegian University of Science and Technology, recently defended her thesis. She has, however, previously published articles as well as books, including the book Sexuality in the Schools. While her research on sex education has led to pilot projects and continuing education for teachers, very few have noticed her critique of racism in Norwegian schools. The Norwegian school wants to promote gender equality, homo tolerance, and anti-white racism. But this requires a more fundamental, in many ways, a more groundbreaking effort, to change the underlying assumptions that are part of the white psyche for thousands of years, Tommy adds. That heterosexuality is normal, and that everything Norwegian is essentially free and gender equal, says Svensson. Shades of the old Soviet propaganda. The positive liberal Norwegian values of gender equality, free sexuality, and diversity are depicted in today's school system in ways that uphold racism and hierarchies between the genders, unquote. Gets a little complicated, doesn't it? The term race is used all the time in the English-speaking world, both in research and everyday speech. According to Svensson, Norway has a more tense and confused relationship to the phenomenon. In her doctoral thesis, Svensson has purposely put the word race in quotes to emphasize her understandings of the term. Quote, I use the term race to describe ideas about inherent differences between groups of people. These ideas are produced by racism. If the racism is prevalent and powerful enough, then race is the result. So race is something like the internet cloud out there, I guess, floating out there in the sky. In Norwegian society, we often think of race as the cause of racism. But it's the other way around, says Svensson. It's clear that there are many understandings of racism in Norwegian society, and that the ambiguity about what racism entails creates challenges and conflicts in the schools. Well, here's one answer to that. Racism is simply race and ism, if you believe in the race. If you believe in race, then you're a racist. If you deny race, you may act racist, but you can't be a racist. If you don't recognize what it is, it's simply gravitating to your own genes. Homo-tolerant like a Norwegian, here it says. According to Svensson's analysis, the scope of Norwegian sex education can be summarized as follows. Sex is defined as coitus, and homosexuality is accepted in Norway. Sex as pleasure is not addressed, and the distinction between homo and hetero is sustained. Once Svensson studied how sexuality is presented in Norwegian textbooks for pupils of 13 to 16, she found that ethnicity or race inhibits a prominent part of the picture, inhabits a prominent part of the picture. The story told is about us here in Norway versus those in other parts of the world. Norwegian and Western sexuality is free of gender equal. Violence against women and government regulation of sexuality through legislation not addressed. Sexual norms in other cultures are depicted as oppressive, often exemplified by arranged marriages and intolerance and homosexuality. Tolerating homosexuality, not a radical queer homosexuality that challenged the norm, but traditional, stable, gay and lesbian identities. Jeez, gets complicated, boys. Appears at a key point in these textbooks, which establishes Norwegian sexuality as especially free. We Norwegians tolerate homosexuality, the others don't, explains Svensson. Oh, what a bunch of cocky pock that is. I mean, talking round and round and using a lot of words and not accurately explaining anything. So forget using that argument to do away with us racists, because that's just not going to work, right? Okay.
Standish outside Westminster Cathedral. And we are all looking forward very, very much to this year's royal wedding, Prince Harry and Elisabetta of Germany. It's true, Elisabetta, the daughter of Kaiser Wilhelm V's younger brother, Prince Henry of Prussia, was named after her future husband's grandmother and distant cousin, Queen Elizabeth II. The German royals, the Hohenzollerns, and the English royals, the House of Saxe-Coburg-Gotha, are keeping this one in the family. Harry and Elisabetta, both descendants of Queen Victoria. And, yes, here they come now with the coaches in the background, the lovely gilding glinting in the summer sunlight, and...
Okay, it didn't work out that way. 100 years ago, Victoria's descendants, the crowned heads of Europe, abetted by their chancellors, prime ministers, and generals, stumbled into a war that produced mass carnage and modern history. World War I begat World War II, which begat the Cold War. Well, this week we are imagining the world as it might have been had the assassins in Sarajevo missed the mark, and if the peace in Europe had held. For the notion of the Anglo-German royal wedding of 2014, we are indebted to Richard Ned Lebeau, whose book, Archduke Franz Ferdinand Lives, is a counterfactual history, the story of a world without world war.
We can't rewind the tape of history. The most we can do is engage in what-if or counterfactual thought experiments. But by creating these extreme but nevertheless plausible versions, it gives us vantage points outside of actual history to reflect back on the contingency and developments of the real historical world.
Yesterday, we imagined a world in which Austria-Hungary evolved into a Central European Union. The German and Russian empires evolved into modern nation-states. German remained Europe's language of scholarship. Okay, we didn't even go near Asia. But on this side of the Atlantic... Well, Margaret Macmillan's new book on the outset of World War I is called The War That Ended Peace, and she figures, without World War I and U.S. intervention in Europe, the 20th century would still have been sort of an American century.
What would the United States have done if they weren't at war? I think its rise to world power would have been slower, but I think it would have gone on. But I think it would perhaps have been more willing to intervene in other parts of the world when things became difficult.
More of an engaged world power by the late 1920s, in other respects, a little slower to develop.
I think that's right. I think the United States would have been more likely to engage. Certainly before the First World War, both Republicans, particularly those on the East Coast, and Democrats, believed that the United States had an obligation to help other parts of the world. And I think that was true of Theodore Roosevelt. It was also true of Woodrow Wilson. And so I think without the First World War, that feeling might have been stronger within the United States.
But we imagine the U.S. would have been different. Musicologist Kim Kowalki of the Eastman School of Music says, without World War I, our identity as Americans would have been slower to take shape.
Most ethnic groups identified prior to World War I with their homelands and still maintained language and social customs. And after World War I, when immigration quotas came in and America for the first time was viewed as a world power, I think that's when most people in this country identified first and foremost as Americans of European descent or wherever, but no longer as Germans, Irish, French, Polish in America.
Kowalki is head of the Kurt Weill Society, and he says, without a century of European turmoil, we wouldn't have hosted a century of European emigre artists and composers.
On a sidewalk, Sunday morning, lies a body once in life.
We don't get Schoenberg, Stravinsky, Hindemith, Bartok, Kurt Weill coming to America.
And we imagine the impact would have been great on popular music, too.
From the mountains to the prairie.
If World War I had not happened, I don't think we would have the song God Bless America.
This is Phil Atterbury of the University of Pittsburgh. Irving Berlin wrote the song during the war for soldiers to sing in an army review. On second thought, Berlin put it in a trunk where it remained until he dusted it off 20 years later. Atterbury also figures that George Gershwin's career would have developed differently. He says, World War I, with its domestic migrations and military deployments, occasioned a wave of popular songs about homesickness, longing for beautiful Ohio or for being back home in Indiana. And Gershwin, who straddled the worlds of classical and popular music, hit the jackpot with one of his own.
Swanee, how I love you, how I love you, my dear old Swanee. The folks up north won't see me no more when I get to that Swanee.
And it became the biggest selling song that Gershwin ever had.
No World War I, no trend for songs of regional longing. Atterbury figures the lack of positive reinforcement for popular song early in his career would have made for a more classical Gershwin, a composer more like Aaron Copland. Perhaps we'd have a Gershwin symphony, but Love Is Here to Stay would never have come in the first place. It's also arguable that in both Europe and America, the drive for legal and social equality would have happened a lot more slowly. Historian Christopher Clark wrote Sleepwalkers, How Europe Went to War in 1914.
The concession of votes for women is another interesting area. The First World War accelerated the granting of women's suffrage.
And American civil rights? Well, Richard Ned LeBeau reasons that without World War I, fewer African Americans would have left the rural South for jobs in the industrial North. Fewer would have found better schools, less discrimination, and a more realistic ambition for genuine progress on civil rights. With no World Wars, LeBeau figures, Major League Baseball would not have been ready for integration in Jackie Robinson's day in the late 1940s. His candidate to break the color line in 1962? Well, the player who in real life challenged baseball's reserve clause and championed free agency, Curt Flood.
A contract must have a beginning and an end. But the reserve clause perpetuated this year after year, even though you only had a one-year contract until you died. As a matter of fact, if they resurrected Babe Ruth, the Yankees would still own him.
He was a man of enormous inner resources and courage, a fine analytical mind, probably more so than Jackie. And he would have been the kind of person, the Branch Rickey of his day, would have selected to break the color bar in baseball.
If there had never been a World War I or II, if that pistol had jammed in Sarajevo, or if statesmen had been shrewd enough to keep the peace, Ernest Hemingway would have said no farewell to arms, and there would have been no Western Front where it was rarely all quiet, no over there, and later on, no Rosie the Riveter to epitomize women at work. On the other hand, no Auschwitz, no Hiroshima, no Iron Curtain. This is, of course, an exercise in imagination, not history. The imagination may be incapable of thinking up the evils that would have been perpetrated in the absence of the evils that actually were. But given the cost of lives of the war they said was fought to end war, 16 million all told, it's hard to imagine a counterfactual history with no World War I that wouldn't have been at least a little better than the real world that we inhabit 100 years after the Great War began.
And we invite...
So that gives you something to think about. See? Track it back. See what war brings you. A lot more negatives than positives and a lot more unintended consequences with wars. And you can listen and read between the lines of this particular program. I'm not going to dissect everything for you, but you've heard it. That if these two anarchists had not bumped off the Archduke, and that had not, and then, of course, along the lines, whenever a war erupts, it's the Jew harvest, to where they move in and make fortunes off all the pain and suffering. And out of that came World War II. Because of the deprivations that the Allies inflicted on Germany and the Versailles Treaty and all that, that gave rise to Hitler, whether you like him or whether you don't like him. And that gave rise to the invasions of Russia and all that stuff in Europe. And then in the First World War II, we started sending black troops over to Europe to kill white men and white women and white children. World War II, we did the same thing. And so you can trace it. Whenever you destabilize populations through warfare, the results are not going to be good. not going to be good at all. So think of that when you hear these rat Republicans and Democrats screaming how, oh, every time there's a hat dropped, we got to go over there and occupy them. We got to get involved in the Ukraine. We got to get involved, and we got to tell Russia where to go. Better watch what you wish for, because what you get is usually a lot of pain. Unintended consequences. That's what usually happens on the race issue. And think about it. Well, I screwed up, boys and girls. Of course, I do that quite regularly. I just got a call from Richard Scutari, order member and federal gulag prisoner now for, 25 years? Coming up on his 30 year, and they're supposed to automatically be paroled or discharged at 30 years no matter what, unless there's some really weird thing. Of course, they'll probably dig that up too. But he's looking forward to that. And unfortunately, I should have taped the conversation and I'd have put it on the radio show, but I was too slow and too dumb to reach over and plunk the magic twanger. So, but anyhow, Richard's doing fine. I asked him if he wanted any books. He said, no, he's got plenty of books. I asked him if there's any subscriptions he wanted, so he said he'd like to get Mother Earth News. So we're going to order that for him tomorrow. So anyhow, nice conversation, about 15, 20 minutes there. Mm-hmm. And also, when I got off there, I decided to send a letter off to this Billings Gazette newspaper that had the article about the local man who was kicked out of the Republican Party because he was pro-white and anti-illegal immigration or anti-immigration and said so. So here's the letter I sent them. Dear editor, I appreciate the new developments in the neocon Republican Party kicking out good people and keeping the dregs. Those good people understand what the Republican Party has become, the war party and the pro-immigration party. If all the white people who stayed home in the last election would have voted, you wouldn't have the Chicago huckster you have now. But what good reason did they have to vote for the Whig Party? Good riddance, National Republican Party. And I just sent that off to the Billings Gazette. And you might want to send them a letter to the editor by email. You should send these letters out and comment on these news stories. It's cheap, doesn't cost you anything, and you can get the word out. It reaches who knows how many people. Wyoming area, and even up there in North Dakota, even though Craig Cobb reached a bad area there to start his new city. But I did get a letter from Craig and yesterday, and he's hoping they just get him out of there, even if they put him in prison, because the food, he says, is killing him. But anyhow, not too much on that scale. He's coming up on, I forget now, his next hearing. Craig Cobb's next hearing will be March the 20th. That's coming up pretty fast with this expedited PSI, which will occur March 20th. And the judge makes an expedited PSI. Well, I wonder whether they're going to try to ship him back to Canada and throw him in a brig up there. That may be what they're up to because of the stupid non-crime that he allegedly committed in Canada with a warrant out for him for free speech. That just shows you how most of the people, most of the inner structure in this country, white or not, if there was no First Amendment of any kind, we'd be screwed. We'd be really be screwed. So even though they screw with us and deny our freedom of speech sometimes, at least we've still got some. Now, in Canada, you don't have any. So anyhow, we'll see what happens to Craig on the 20th. And I just wish he'd have followed my advice and spit in her eye. And I think he'd have been in a lot better shape, but that's water under the bridge now. We'll see what happens. But no matter what happens now, I have a bridgehead in Leith, North Dakota. We've got a lot, and I don't think there's any way they can take it away from me, and I'm not going to let them get rid of it. I don't think so. I don't see any reason to sell it, and I'm just trying to figure out what would be the best thing to do. Now, if we had lots in a lot of small towns like that, just one lot, two lot, cheap lots, not going into town with a gang of people, there's a lot of possibilities. Gee, we could build a radio station on that lot. We could be serving all of North Dakota from a, put up a 100-foot tower there. Yeah, there's all kinds of possibilities. And of course, if you had a radio station there, it would probably reach up into Canada, too. Jewish-created label of neo-Nazi is getting so proliferated, it's like anti-Semite, that it gets to the point where it's unusable. It doesn't work because it's getting to the place where they call everybody a neo-Nazi, which, like I say, is a Jew-created term to cover anybody they don't like. But to call all these people neo-Nazis that are nationalist parties and all that is going to come back and bite them in the ass. It's like World War II. Everybody's a fascist. I mean, you know, there was a fascist party. There have been fascist parties. But now everything they don't like is a fascist. So you don't know really all the time what the hell you're dealing with. Are you dealing with a National Socialist? Are you dealing with a fascist member of a fascist organization or what? Well, boys and girls, it's getting a little hairy around here. I was up at 4 this morning and I drove 150 miles. And I'm getting a little ragged here and I'm making mistakes, so we're going to have to piece this show together. So I'm going to close it out with an update on what North Dakota, Canada, and all these places are doing about this tar sands things and how it's going to really destroy things if they allow it to keep going on the Keystone Project. Here's the latest on that from Rogue Progressive.
Discovered that another firm that evaluated the impact of Keystone XL pipeline on the environment has ties to TransCanada, the parent company. This just never stops. Remember what Obama said? Remember what Mr. President said, that if there was an appreciable effect? Or what did he say? He said last June that if Keystone should be approved, he would approve it only if, quote, it does not significantly exacerbate the problem of carbon pollution, end quote. And so in the meantime, Mr. President has appointed or delegated authority to conduct these studies. Well, a conflict of interest statement from the consulting firm ICF International, submitted to the U.S. State Department in 2012, reveals that the company had done other work for TransCanada, but apparently that didn't disqualify them. What they did, according to Huffington Post, ICF International analyzed greenhouse gas emissions from tar sands oil, the kind that will flow through the pipeline, for the State Department's supplemental draft environmental impact statement released in March of 2013. The website of this company states that the firm was hired to compare life cycle emissions associated with oil derived from Canada's tar sands to those associated with oil from conventional crude. Work it on a comparison basis so that when Obama approves this, whoever he pushes up front to say it's been approved will be able to say, well, now wait a minute, there's only a 19% difference between the destructive potential of tar sands oil and the destructive reality of what we're already doing. Well, it's 19%, or whatever number that they come up with. The final environmental impact statement, the FEIS, released in January, 2 months ago. ICF International, this company that's worked for TransCanada, on its list of preparers, with ICF staffers working on the greenhouse gas and market analysis portion of the report. Oh, well, then we know it's perfectly okay. Right? The FEIS, Final Environmental Impact Statement, concludes that the projected 830,000 barrels of sludge that would flow through the pipeline every day would add between 147 million and 168 million metric tons of greenhouse gas emissions to the atmosphere annually. But it also says that the pipeline would be, quote, unlikely to significantly impact the rate of extraction in the oil sands or the continued demand for heavy crude oil at refineries in the United States, end quote. In other words, the report concludes those greenhouse gas emissions from tar sands oil would probably be produced with or without Keystone. ...2012, which said that the firm and its Canadian affiliate, ICF Consulting Canada, Inc., had done work for TransCanada before. However, the letter said this: we have thoroughly considered the matter and are confident that this work does not represent an organizational conflict of interest based on several important considerations detailed in the attached materials. See, the letter says we. That means ICF International determined that their company, we are confident that report will not represent a conflict of interest. Everything that we, even though we've done tons of work for TransCanada, we have concluded that it's okay. We've concluded that. Isn't that nice? It's like, I would like to go back to university. And those C's I used to get, I would like to go into those professors in international studies that I took at NC State, international relations, and I'd like to go back in and say, Professor, I've concluded that the C that you gave me 45 years ago was not really something that my work deserved. Therefore, we have concluded that I really deserved an A. Wouldn't that be great? We could do that. So the company here has concluded that there's no problem. 147 million to 168 million metric tons of greenhouse gas emissions will be added to the atmosphere annually. I'm trying to imagine 1 ton of gas. How many cubic meters? How much in terms of volume? How much is 1 metric ton of gas? Whatever it is, multiply it by 1 million and then multiply it again by 168, and you get the low figure in this. So, what do you suppose El Presidente is going to say? Didn't he say he was going to make his decision in May of this year? Oh, by the way, this company, ICF, has also provided services to other oil interests that support the construction of the Keystone XL pipeline, not just to TransCanada. The firm did consulting work a couple of years ago for the American Petroleum Institute.
The lady in black! There she is again!
Evaluating the potential effects on the oil and gas industry from greenhouse gases cap-and-trade legislation, then under consideration in Congress. That study concluded that the bill would increase the cost of drilling and operating natural gas wells and would likely lead to a decrease in drilling. So it was defeated, wasn't it? Wasn't it defeated? Last year, Inside Climate News noted that ICF's work for pipeline and oil companies that ICF's work was for pipeline and oil companies generally. That's all they work for. More or less. So that company was picked by the State Department to make the final environmental impact evaluation of what the Keystone XL is going to do. That company, the one that only works for oil and pipeline companies, well, that's a stroke of genius. Whoever came up with that, whoever in the Obama administration, in the executive branch, said, well, if we're going to evaluate the environmental impact of this monstrous, death-dealing tar sands extraction, let's get a company that does work for that very industry. Because, you know, they're the experts. They would know.
Crawling in the dirt. And for all...
You know, several people have mentioned about Swinstein, Diane Swinstein, that's what we call her. We gave her that name back in the 70s. And now she's a senator, has been in there forever, and now she was all for the NSA spying on everybody else, but now she's all pissed off because the Central Intelligence Agency has been spying on her and her committee. And I think it's funny as hell. She's also a big gun control advocate. And I've told you people on this show a long time ago that I remember way back in the early 70s, or maybe it was the mid-70s, standing on the steps of City Hall in San Francisco when she was the mayor of San Francisco. And standing right there, she was, and I could see she was packing a pistol. Yeah, and she had a bodyguard right beside her, on the other side of her, packing a pistol. And so I was within about about a foot of her. And, of course, no pistol could have saved her, because anybody with a sharp knife could have cut her throat before they could have ever cleared leather with their pistol. But I wasn't in the throat-cutting business, so I... But I was just fantasizing. But anyhow, she's been a bitch, a witch, and a Swinstein. And her husband's neck deep in arms trading with rogue countries or whatever all over the world. And makes his money off arms. And she's for arms control here for you. Her husband could sell millions of dollars worth of arms overseas to any little gang that comes along. So that's Diane Swinstein. Shows you how hypocritical all these politicians are. As long as it's happening to you, and like somebody mentioned, during the 70s, and I remember when the CIA, not CIA so much, but the FBI was kicking in the doors of everybody. Minutemen, Black Panthers, SDS, Klan, everybody was under the axe and getting their doors kicked in. And nothing happened. Of course, they didn't get any reprieve at all. But when the Republicans invaded the Watergate Hotel and broke into the Democratic headquarters, then the shit really hit the fan. And that's how you know how these people are. What they plan for you is not what they plan for them. There's two sets of rules. their rules and their rules, and that's the way it goes. So anytime these senators and congressmen talk, they're talking out of both sides of their mouth. And since I consider them all war criminals, they all voted for war, they always vote for war, why shouldn't Swinstein vote for war? Her husband's, that's his bread and butter, selling arms. Well, that's about it for today, boys and girls. I'll have to piece this show together because I got disturbed two or three times there, and it's coming out in pieces. So I may be later in the afternoon till I get this thing out of here. 14:05, and let's play a song for the She-Wolves.
I guess everybody goes to the grocery store, even me. There's no telling who in the world there you're gonna see. Lost in space at the cash only aisle number 3. I came face to face with an old memory. Caught by surprise, I felt I was gasping for air. Paper or plastic, can't you see, man, I don't really care. She hadn't noticed me, and I thought I'd leave it that way. Then her eyes met mine, and from that point there was no escape. I said, it's wonderful to see you. This is sure a nice surprise. Your little girl is lovely. No doubt she's got your eyes. Yeah, it looks like got that sweatshirt to wear, do you? I won it at the county fair back in 92. Yeah, I'm still playing softball with the same old in a lot of ways, things haven't changed very much. I said, it's wonderful to see you. This is sure a nice surprise. Your little girl is lovely. No doubt she's got your eyes. Yeah, it looks like it might rain today. I guess we're overdue. Oh, and by the way, I never stopped loving you. Oh, and by the way, I never stopped loving you.